Hello and welcome back to Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Friends. I am Jonah, joined as always by my co-host Ben.
Hello, hello.
And today we are going to talk about board games. A surprise. Unlike last week, right?
Yeah, I mean, we usually get to board games eventually, so.
So first things first, how did you do in the tournament yesterday?
My first round, well, we should probably tell our listeners, we played in a disc golf tournament yesterday. In Pennsylvania, and it was a beautiful day for disc golf. I think it was perfect weather, personally.
Yeah, it was great. Still
not too
air.
Warm. Yeah, not too warm, not too cold, not too much wind. So, perfect. My first round was a disaster. My second round was excellent. So I ended up in ninth place out of, I think, it was technically 15 people, but one person, unfortunately, dropped out between rounds because they went 72 over par in the first round.
Yeah, which, they didn't have a good time.
Yeah, and you're paying money to join these tournaments, so I'm not really surprised that they dropped out. Because
I would think they would
fun.
Finish it because they paid for the round, or for both rounds.
I don't know, but I wish that I got onto that scorecard just to see what they did before they dropped out, because their score disappeared, so I couldn't see it. But yeah, I went 11 over in the first round, which wasn't, it was frustrating. I was having fun the whole day, but it's still frustrating to like miss putts that you know you can make and things like that and just have it not go your way.
But you really got it together round two.
Yeah, round two, I improved by 8 strokes and went plus 3, which was actually the third best round of our division for the second round. So I ended up plus 14 and I ended up in ninth place, which I improved from 12th after the first round to 9th, so it felt good to be in the top 10, even if there were only 14/15 people. But how did you do?
That's great. Yeah, I did pretty well, actually. I had a great first round. I went plus 2, which is my record on the course, so that was great. And then I had an iffy second round. I was on the lead card for the first time in my life, which was exciting. And then I ended up getting third place by 1 stroke, which was great.
And yeah, it was definitely cool to see.
Yeah, it's funny because I was telling this story to some friends this morning and I said, yeah, I got third place in the lowest division at the tournament. So, you know, there's pro, advanced, intermediate, recreational. I am the third best recreational player.
Hey, but it's the third best at something.
That's right. It counts.
What was the trophy if you were the overall winner in each division, though?
Yeah, the trophy was a little dumpster with a fire in it, a little dumpster fire. I think it was to symbolize how 2020 has been going so far.
Yeah, and what's neat is the card that I was on the second round was actually with the guy who created the trophies. So he hand built them. So it was pretty neat for that to happen. But yeah, these were pretty cool. They have the for those of you who have seen like the little cloth flames that get blown up by like a fan and then lit up red to look like fire, it was literally that inside of a dumpster fire or inside of a dumpster, making it a dumpster fire. It was really cool.
And then the free disc we got also has a dumpster on it.
Yeah, the stamp on it's a dumpster. So it was a good time though. I enjoyed it. I would like to play a tournament there again.
Yeah, that's
I would like
a good
to go
course.
Yeah, I would like to go back there again because, man, a couple of holes that I feel like now I could really improve on that I played pretty poorly this round. But
yeah, my goal is just to go even there someday. Plus 2 got me pretty close, so I'm happy with that.
Oh, real quick timeout. Blacklist Games, the company that makes Street Masters, Fantasy Miniatures Series 1 and the new upcoming Dire Alliance Horror Miniatures game just selected me as a winner for a prize, and I'm pretty sure the winner for this prize, I literally just got a message about it, which is why normally I don't like read these things, but I don't know why they were friend requesting me. I think it's a full all-in pledge for Dire Alliance.
Dang.
I'll keep you posted because I'm replying ready right now to say that I'm ready for my prize.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
Wow. That would be really cool because I'm imagining that that's over $100. Worth of goods, yeah. And that would be really, really nice because I did want to back it because I like their games, but it would be much better if I don't have to pay for it.
Yeah. Sweet. What a pleasant surprise.
Yeah. And that
Well, now
segues
that.
us into some games,
Yeah,
some
perfect.
board games. Perfect segue.
Why don't you start us off? What'd you play this past week?
I played a lot more Unmatched, and I need to think every time I say the word Unmatched because I feel like I'm about to say Undaunted,
Right.
which is another game that I own in a similar vein. And we'll be talking about that in a little bit as well. But what's funny is if you watch the Shut Up and Sit Down YouTube review of Unmatched, Quinns, the guy who's reviewing it, says Undaunted about 5 times in the review. By mistake. So that's what happens when some games have similar names and also similar concepts. But yeah, I did a little best 2 out of 3 tournament with my brother. I lost the best 2 out of 3. This is not new for anybody listening. But the one round that I did win, and this is one thing that has come up with this game that makes it a little iffy. The way that my brother and I do it is I put the names of the characters into a random name wheel. So it spins a wheel on the internet, and like whoever pops up is who we play as
That's
in
smart.
terms of the characters. And then for the maps, there are a total of 7 playable maps. So we number each one 1 through 7, and someone just says 5, and then that's the map that we play. And unfortunately for my brother, when I was the Raptors from Jurassic Park, we picked a map that has not many escape routes for movement. And the way the raptors work is just like in the movie, they are pack hunters, which means there are 3 raptors that need to be killed for the other person to win the game. But the raptors gain a bonus whenever they are like adjacent to the enemy fighter, and they move a lot. They have a fast movement speed. So I literally pinned my brother, who was playing as Sherlock Holmes, I believe. I pinned him in the corner of a map, and you can't move through enemy units. So, similar to what he did to me when he was Medusa, I did to him as the Raptors. The difference is Medusa's little minions only have 1 health. Each Raptor had 7. So, I was basically pummeling him in a corner for the entire 20-minute fight, and he like barely moved. So,
How much fun did he have?
Not really much at all. And I feel bad because that's never really a fun thing to happen, to not really have any potential to escape or move.
Right. At least it was a 20-minute game then.
I agree.
All
But
right. So that was Unmatched. Anything else?
Let's see, what else did I play? I think that was really it. I think I oh no. Sorry, it was last weekend, so it was a little hard for me to remember. I played Gugong.
Oh yeah, how'd that go? In person, right?
Yeah, so that was in person with Jared and our friend Kevin, and we didn't use the expansion, we just played the base game. It was fun. I love Gugong. I think it's a great game. I think we've discussed it a little bit on here before. So it is a card replacement game. So you need to replace a card on the board with a higher numbered card in order to perform an action. And Kevin ended up winning. He was collecting a lot of jade, which gives you a lot of points. I came in second place, I believe. I came in second place, and my brother lost, which is a nice turn of events for me. And yeah, I mean, the game is beautiful. The new velvet box that came in with the expansion is beautiful. It was a good time.
Excellent. How long did it take? Because that's about an hour long for people who have played it before.
Yeah, so the thing about the two of them, and I don't think either of them listen, so I'm free to say this, they are not great at listening when it comes to me teaching games. And I'm not the greatest games teacher anyway.
Because that's me.
Yeah. Well, honestly, it probably is, but at least for me, you are a much better teacher than I am. But they are very much a okay, stop teaching it, we'll learn as we go type. Both of them are like that. And it's kind of a pain because not all games can be learned as you play, and there are some rules that come up that you need to know beforehand. And they rush me through the teaching process, and then I'm spending the entire game telling them strategy and rules, and then I end up losing, and then they make fun of me, which is a good time.
Yeah, without that last making fun of thing, I think, when I was talking to Jessica a month or two ago about teaching and people who enjoy learning as they play, that's frustrating for us because we like to front load rules and know how to play the game before we play it. But I think next time someone says that to me, I'm just going to say okay and try and go through the game with them and
Yep.
just, have that first game be a learning game. Because every first game is a learning game anyway. So
Yep.
maybe it would behoove us to just, let it happen and run through
That's
it that way.
true. Also, fun fact, this Blacklist games winner thing is a scam.
Oh no.
Yeah, I it says click here to register, and then it takes you to a very scammy looking Google site. And then when you actually go to the page of Blacklist Games, who's messaging me, it doesn't say facebook.com/blacklistgames. It says Pippin Siswana. So I did not win, so I will be backing this game.
Oh man,
But
what a roller coaster ride for our
that's
listeners.
disappointing. I'm disappointed now, to be honest with you. Very, very disappointed.
Well,
Sad Ben. Tell me
all
about the games you played so you could cheer me up.
right. I only played one game this week, and it was Greed Incorporated. Greed Incorporated is a splatter game, and you all know them from the Splatter Special we had. They make Food Chain Magnate, The Great Zimbabwe, Indonesia, Antiquity, Roads and Boats, lots of stuff. Anyway, Greed Incorporated is a really interesting game that I actually chuckled a little bit while reading the rule book, which is strange, maybe embarrassing, who knows? But Greed Incorporated is a game where you are the CEO of a company, maybe two companies, maybe zero companies. And what you do is you make the company a lot of money, and then you get yourself fired from the company and get a nice golden parachute. But it's not money that wins the game, because once you get that nice golden parachute, you buy some things. You buy some fancy cars, you buy some art, you buy a boat, It's basically conspicuous consumption, the board game. You start off as a CEO with absolutely no money, but you can just siphon money off of these companies that you get fired from and then show off how rich you are. Hence the name Greed Incorporated. Go on.
So funny enough, when you mentioned Greed Incorporated, I was like, oh man, I played that too. And then I realized that I didn't because I had a kitchen nightmare and had to back out last
That's
minute.
right. You were
So
almost in
yes, I was almost in this game. So I almost confused myself for a second
it.
there.
So we played it four player. The game took about 2.5 hours on Tabletop Simulator. It is a really fascinating game because the way it works is when you're the CEO of a company, you'll have this year's income, last year's income, and free cash. So anytime you spend money for the company, it comes out of free cash. And anytime you make money for the company, it goes into this year's income. After the round, this year's income slides over to last year's income, and last year's income slides over into free cash. So any money you make, there's a bit of a delay before it can actually be spent by the company. And the way you stay a CEO is if the company made more money this year than last year, everything's fine. But as soon as a company makes less money this year than last year, the blame game phase happens and you get to blame other executives. So in each company, there is a CEO, a CFO, and a COO. And during the blame game, you just point to one of the other executives and say, they should get fired. Interestingly enough, you can point to yourself and say, I should get fired. When you are the CEO of a company and you get fired, you get 40% of the free cash. If you are a CFO or a COO, you will get 20% of the free cash. And not only do you get money, you are free to run another company. You can also be the CEO of two companies and make some ridiculous trades between those two companies. Because you're the CEO of each company, you can decide what happens. So normally, if I'm the CEO of company X and Ben is the CEO of company Y, I will say, hey, Ben, I'll trade you this cotton for that t-shirt. And Ben will say, oh, that's not a great deal. Throw in $20. And I'll say, okay, fine. If I'm the CEO of two companies, I can trade $1 from one company for $100 from the other company because I'm the CEO of both companies and what I say goes. So through this interesting trade abuse that you can do, you can try and time things well to get yourself kicked out of the company or also just kick yourself out of the company and then have money for, like I said earlier, conspicuous consumption. Because the moral of the story is, it's not money that matters, it's looking wealthy that matters.
Did you have a good time?
Yeah, so I did have a good time. I thought it was neat. But there was something in it that I really didn't like. And we all kind of came to this realization in the final round of the game. So anytime you make money, as I explained earlier, for the company that you're running, that money goes into this year's income square spot on the placard, on the player board. Which means any money that you make during that round is irrelevant until basically two rounds from now. It can't be used by the company for two rounds, and it can't be siphoned out of the company with your golden parachute for two rounds. Which means in the last two rounds of the game, the trading phase doesn't really amount to anything. And in the very last round of the game, no matter how much money you make, it doesn't go anywhere. So we actually skipped that round or that phase in the last round of the game. And I'm not sure how I feel about that because it mattered in the previous eight rounds. And then all of a sudden at the end of the game, we just say, oh, this is irrelevant. And I don't think I've ever played a game where something was actually objectively irrelevant in the final round.
Is this the part where you got schooled on BoardGameGeek on how to use the search function?
Yeah, so I posted on BoardGameGeek and said, does the last turn matter? And someone commented and said, yes, and if you use the search function, you would have seen that other people have asked this before. But look, it was 10:30 at night. I couldn't be bothered to use the search function.
So my question is, because I did not read through all of those other threads, does the last round actually not matter? Like, legitimately not matter, or is it just how you guys played it?
Yeah, the last round doesn't matter for that phase.
So to me, that's really surprising, both because I haven't played a game where that occurs either, but also for a splatter game to basically have a round that means nothing. Typically, everything in their games is so tight and tied together.
Right, That round technically matters because you need to go into that round for the income to slide over to free cash for that round.
Okay, it's just that phase of the game, of the round.
Right, because then also after that phase, you know, if you make $0, then you get to kick yourself out and get a payout. So the round has to exist to be able to kick yourself out for making zero money this round. But at the same time, you would think, why would anyone ever spend money for something else? Because it just doesn't benefit you.
Makes sense. Where would you put this in your splatter list?
I would put this in fourth. I would say it is after Food Chain Bus and the Great Zimbabwe, but above Antiquity and Indonesia. Because it is interesting with player interaction throughout, and some good tomfoolery can happen as well with being the CEO of two companies.
Gotcha. So unlike Antiquity, it's not like you're playing 3 hours of a game by yourself and then you all come together and finally play together.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you're playing with the other people the whole time. And whenever you play, you'll play a card at the start of each round that has an asset on it, and that asset is also attached to you yourself, the player. And if another company, if another person at the table decides for their company to purchase that asset, that slots you into the board of directors. So in doing so, they are making you the CFO or COO of the company, who can then be promoted if they fire themselves or if you blame them in the blame game. The issue with that I had is if someone has a sweet company that they are abusing the CEO of two companies' rule or ability with, you can't really do anything to stop them because they're just going to not purchase your asset, so you don't get to go into their company. While at the same time, you can be the CEO and the CFO and the COO of a company, so you can just buy your own assets, fire yourself from the board, get a payout, get promoted again, rinse and repeat. So that part was a little strange.
I would be interested in playing this at some point when I'm not cleaning up a kitchen full of caramel.
Yeah. And yeah, I thought it was really neat, and I would definitely play it again. I'm not dying to play it again, but I would definitely play it again. Patrick said it's his second favorite splatter until the last round of the game.
Disappointing to see things go above bus.
Yeah, agreed. But, you know, we'll see what happens on the next play of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
This week, we will not be doing a game of the week or a mechanic of the week, because the topic of the week covers a lot of games and a lot of mechanics. And we're hoping that we will do a bit of a deep dive in each one, and people will enjoy it. So, the topic for the week is overlap in games that you own, or should you own multiple games that do the same thing, or how do you justify owning multiple games that do the same thing? So, first thing we're going to talk about is worker placement. Ben, how many games do you have that have worker placement in it?
It's very hard for me to count the number because there are a lot, but worker placement is one of, if not my favorite mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I at least have 10 worker placement games. I think it's safe to say I at least have 10 worker placement games.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I counted up mine as well, and I have 5. If you don't have the strictest definition, for instance, Gugong with the card placement, I say is effectively worker placement. And
I wish there was a way to search within your own Board Game Geek collection, instead of like filtering for owned and whatnot. I wish there was a way to apply a filter for like different mechanics within your own collection, because I'm looking at, we've already pretty much gotten out of the way that I collect games as well as play them. So it's hard for me to count on my shelf because there are a decent number of games on my shelf. So I'm looking at my Board Game Geek collection to go through all this, but it would be nice to be able to filter my actual online collection by type of mechanic.
Yeah, well, I'm fortunate enough not to have over 100 games, and I just sat in front of my little bookshelf and I looked at my games this morning. And I did my own mental search function.
Yep.
So what are 2 or 3 of your worker placement games off the top of your head, and are they different enough to justify owning them? But at the same time, if you don't care about that, it doesn't matter.
So, 2 that I can tell you right off the bat are Tricarion and Anachrony.
Mm-hmm.
Both by Mind Clash Games, so that gets even more similar, because the 2 games are both worker placement, both by the same company, and they both are quite heavy in terms of being a little bit of a brain burner of a game. So they're not like a quick, fast-paced worker placement game. I would say, and I think this is going to be common for me when it comes to why I own multiples, is the big thing for me that differentiates is theme. And even if a mechanic is the same, if a theme is interesting enough for me to want to own the game, I typically will not let the fact that it has a mechanic in it very similar or the same as another game I own get in the way.
Right. I mean, theme and feel can
Yeah.
be huge factors in game ownership because, you know, I have multiple worker placement games as well, and none of them have the same theme, but the main thing is that they feel different, or for me at least, integrate worker placement differently. So like you were saying with Anachrony and Tricarion, one thing that I like about Anachrony that makes it different from the other worker placement games I own is that there are different types of workers. I think that's a nice shakeup of the mechanic with the added time travel theme to really cement its place in my collection, in my library.
I would agree with you there. And what's neat for me, and I think it is a theme of Mind Clash games, is Tricarion also has different types of workers, but on top of that, they add on the fact that different types of workers have different amounts of actions that they can do. So
Right.
that in particular is pretty different from most of the other worker placement games that I own. It's not just a strict place a worker here and do something. It is, do you want this worker to go to this space where it will get some added points so it can do even more actions? Or do you want to put a more powerful worker further back because it can do that even without needing those bonus points? So it adds a little bit of a layer to the strategy of where you want to place your workers.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up the mixing of mechanics as well, because another worker placement game I own is Dominant Species, and that is a mix of worker placement and area control. And that is not a mixture of mechanics that I have in any other game that I own. And I think that definitely gives it a spot on my
So,
shelf.
knowing you, you don't have many area control games in general, though, right? That is not your favorite genre.
Yeah, I don't really like area control games. And yet, I technically have four. You want to talk about area control now?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can easily kind of bounce back and forth between mechanics, but based
Sure.
on the overlap. But I'm kind of curious which area control games you have, because I do know, like you said, it's not your favorite, so I'm kind of interested in what you've got.
Right, so the area control games that I have are Pax Pamir Second Edition, Cerebria, Dominant Species, and Twilight Imperium Fourth Edition. So we already covered Dominant Species, and that is different from the other three area control games that I have because it has worker placement, and none of the other three do. So that's an easy point in the different column. Cerebria, I think, warrants a spot because it is a strictly team-based area control game. It is 2v2 controlling different areas of the human brain, and I think the team-based area control is a really interesting design choice.
Cerebria is awesome. I want to play Cerebria again sometime soon.
Yeah, I want to play it all the time, but then I think, oh, I'll just try the solo mode, and then I look at the 11 additional pages of solo rules, and I'm just like, maybe I'll do something else.
Yep.
How about you? I know you have quite a bit of area control.
Yeah, so area control is up there for me because typically miniatures games that you find on Kickstarter have area control in them because you want to put all of these miniatures on the map.
Right, because
Which,
everyone likes having toys, and when you're a
yep.
kid and you have two toys, you smash them together.
Exactly. And area control, I think area control and dudes on a map are pretty much the same concept, to the point where I didn't split them out from each other. But yeah, I think the biggest one that I've got, and let me just find it in my list because I had it here. I think that the easiest one to talk about is probably Blood Rage. And Blood Rage is, technically a little bit of worker placement, but really not much. It's definitely more area control slash dudes on a map, because in Blood Rage, you are playing as Nordic clans and in the Norse mythology, and you're essentially Vikings, and you are trying to control various areas of the map in order to gain points by either pillaging these various villages that are in there for points, or at the end of a round, Ragnarok comes and actually destroys parts of the map, but you get points for dying in Ragnarok. So you're trying to control different sections of the map based on how the game looks like it's going. And that would probably be the most well-known one in my collection, I would guess, just because it's a pretty popular game amongst board gamers.
Right.
And I would say Blood Rage, while I do own a lot of area control games, I do think Blood Rage actually differentiates itself pretty well because it's got the whole drafting mechanism at the beginning, which can change your strategy game to game. It's because you can't always get the same cards in the draft in order to do the same actions. So I think it changes the game up quite a bit. And another game by the same company to compare that to would be Rising Sun. Rising Sun is actually by the same designer, so that's about as close as you can get. And that differentiates itself as well, even though it's an area control game, because it's got bidding for each battle that you're doing on the map. You're bidding like a number of coins to do various actions. And I think the team up mechanism in terms of forming alliances and breaking alliances also differentiates that one.
Yeah. So sneak peek at our conclusion, which I'm sure everyone can already infer. If the game is not just that one single mechanic and it mixes it with something else, it is probably going to be different enough to be enjoyed and held on to. Now, I picked this topic because Ben and I have very different views on this, I think, because I don't want to have two games that do the same thing. And of course, that is a very subjective thing, and I will define that how I like. But if I have two games that do something very similar, and I always will choose to play one of those over the other one, if I'm in the mood for that type of game, then I'm going to get rid of the game that isn't getting chosen. So with my board games, I try and really refine my shelf to ones that don't have much overlap.
Now, have you gotten rid of any in particular recently because they were too similar to another game in your collection?
Yeah, so I have Clans of Caledonia and Terra Mystica, and those two games are very similar. They both have contract fulfillment in them, which I really enjoy. And I really enjoyed Terra Mystica, and I do still enjoy it. But if I am in person and choosing to play one of those two games, I think I'm always going to choose Clans of Caledonia. So for that reason, Terra Mystica is on the chopping block, trying to trade it to someone else.
What is the descriptor that you use for Clans of Caledonia? Was it the perfect midweight game or something? It's just like it does what it needs to do, like exactly how it needs to do it. You said something specific,
probably.
But I don't remember what you said now.
Yeah, I mean, I just think Clans is a great hour and a half to 2 hour game that does some neat things and doesn't overstay its welcome. And it's quite different from other games where I would talk about that with. So
I like Clans. I have Clans as well. I think a whole nother topic of discussion, for me at least, could be owning games that people in your game group own.
Yeah. We'll cover that when we have another guest that you can talk about even more overlap.
Yeah, which is even dumber than owning multiples of like the same type of mechanic, because then it's like, who wants to bring their copy of the game tonight? And that happens with me fairly often. But go for it.
I was just going to say, let's bounce around to another mechanic.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do, but you go first.
Let's talk deck building. How many deck building games do you have, and are they different enough? And like I said before, does it matter to you if they are?
Yeah, so just to confirm what Jonah said before, we do have different opinions on this. And for me, I really don't care all that much if a game is similar to another game in my collection. I like having the game, and I like having the option of playing games, even if they're the same
Yeah, mechanic. Neither of us is right.
In terms of deck builders, I think I have like two deck builders.
I only have two written down as well.
Yeah, I've got Undaunted, which is not okay. Unmatched. So Undaunted Normandy.
Do you have Undaunted North Africa? And if so, does that count as a third?
I would count that more as an expansion than anything, yeah. But I mean, I guess it could. That's another thing too, but we talked about expansions already, but Undaunted Normandy is the same, basically the same game as Undaunted North Africa. They're just set in different theaters of war. I own both of them. I haven't played North Africa yet though, but it does add some mechanics to the game, like vehicles, which I'm interested to give that game a shot. But I think the only other deck builder that I have is Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle.
Mm-hmm. And how do those deck builders differ? Or do they differ?
These are, in my opinion, wildly different because Undaunted is kind of a little bit of area control. Mm-hmm. But you're not... You're not building your deck in the same way that you build a deck in a traditional deck building game. In a traditional deck building game, there are cards that are like out in like a market, and you use your points to buy cards from like a shared market. Typically you're buying from a shared market. So you are kind of racing against your opponent to pick better cards than them. But mm-hmm. in Undaunted, you are buying from your own market to basically reinforce your army. So it's a little bit different because you're both trying to control things on the map, but also counter what your opponent's buying from their own market by buying cards from your own market. Whereas in Harry Potter, Hogwarts Battle, which I haven't played in a while, it's a cooperative game. So you are working together to buy cards to help you defeat, like, the Death Eaters and Voldemort's armies. So it's those two are so different, which is a very uncommon for me, that they easily keep their places right. in my collection because of how different they are. Plus, I mean, I love Harry Potter, so there are I think I had mentioned this before, but there are Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter are probably two themes that, if they exist in a board game, I don't care if they're the exact same game, just with those themes, I will buy the game. Like, you could... Lord of the Rings Monopoly. If I owned 300 copies of Monopoly and they released a new Lord of the Rings Monopoly, I would buy it. Like, that's how I am with Lord of the Rings, so...
So, for deck builders... I mean, I own Lord of the Rings Trivial Pursuit, so... Yeah. I'm right there with you. You said Undaunted and Harry Potter, right?
Yes.
So you're forgetting the big one?
If you're talking about Clank, I don't own Clank.
Wow, you can't think of the deck builder that I'm thinking of.
If you're thinking of Millennium Blades.
No, Star Realms.
Oh my god, I own three! Star Realms is the non-cooperative version of the deck builder that I was talking about, where there is a shared market, and you are trying to compete against your opponent to buy cards quicker than... your opponent can in order to have an advantage.
And to bring their health down to zero.
Yes, and to bring their health down to zero. I'm trying to think of... Because somehow I forgot Star Realms.
So maybe you forgot something else?
Yeah, but I'm also trying to think now, since I forgot it, I wasn't prepared to discuss how it's different than the other ones.
I'll start off then, because I have... For my two deck builders, I have Star Realms and Hardback. And they're both deck builders. Hardback is... deck building meets Scrabble, which I think is pretty enjoyable. And I was thinking about how these two differ, and obviously totally different theme and play, but a main difference in the gameplay is in Star Realms, you are actively attacking your opponent or opponents and trying to bring their health down to zero. Whereas in Hardback, you are trying to make better, bigger words to get to a certain point value. So Star Realms is aggressive by nature, which is fine, and I quite enjoy it. Jessica certainly enjoys it, as she beats me every time we play. And then hardback is not cooperative, but it's not really going against the opponent. Because the only time someone's going to say dang it in hardback is if you buy a card that they wanted to buy. Less hurt feelings.
Yeah, so I think now that you've mentioned the actively attacking your opponent bit, I think because I have Undaunted, which is a competitive deck builder, and Star Realms, I think those two differentiate themselves in that Undaunted, you are affecting the movement of these little troops on the map, but Star Realms, you are directly attacking your opponent. So it has a bit of a different feel when you play each of them, because you're trying to do two different things on the actual play space. So I think that is what differentiates those two for me.
Mm-hmm. All right, next after deck building, we have cooperative games. How many cooperative games do you have? Or can you name a few? And yeah, are they different?
So for me, when it comes to cooperative games, typically my cooperative games are dungeon crawler games. So that would fall in the vein of Gloomhaven. I don't own Gloomhaven, but I'll say Midara. Too Many Bones. Kingdom Death Monster. Those types of games where you are progressing through a campaign as a group, and you are typically doing a few different scenarios each time you play. The big thing that makes these different for me, honestly, is theme. I think these games are very similar outside of Too Many Bones, which I'll talk about on its own. I think just in terms of like what you're doing, where you're going out, you're fighting minions or you're fighting a boss, I think they're very similar. Mm-hmm. So for me, Kingdom Death versus Midara, the themes are so wildly different. Kingdom Death Monster, we've talked about, it's just a really, really dark horror. They literally call themselves boutique horror, is how they describe it. A boutique horror miniatures board game. Midara is another miniatures dungeon crawling board game, but it's a Japanese RPG anime style board game. And it's got this ridiculous 400-page storybook that's fully narrated, and you can listen to audiobook versions of it instead of having to read it all yourself. Cool. So, yeah, I'd like to give that one a shot someday. COVID got in the way, and also the fact that there's a Act 2 and 3 coming, and there's an update pack that I'd like to wait for before playing the first one, because they have some like errata to fix some things in the initial release. But I think those, it's just 100% the complete opposite on theme.
Mm-hmm. So when I was trying to really break down my games taxonomically with these mechanics and everything, for cooperative games, one of the restrictions that I tried to put on myself for what games counted as cooperative are games that strictly everyone wins or loses. So in the co-op games that you mentioned, can there be one winner, or is it really everyone's in it together?
In the ones that I mentioned, everyone is in it together. I know that I've owned games like Nemesis, which I sold, which is semi-cooperative, where you're right. All working towards a specific goal, but you have your own hidden objective, which would cause certain people to win or lose. I don't have many, if any, of those anymore now that I've gotten rid of Nemesis.
Right, and for the same reason I didn't include Cerebria or Tichu in this, because yeah. I think 2v2 games, you know, there's cooperative elements to it, but not for everyone.
Agreed.
Or not everyone together.
Yeah, no, so these are definitely all everyone wins, everyone loses type co-op games. But I just really quickly want to touch on Too Many Bones, because I did say it was a bit different. Too Many Bones is a dice-building cooperative game, and this game has like 300-plus dice in it, and you are basically leveling up your character by giving them more dice to use during battles. And it is so wildly different from most games. So everything from this company called Chip Theory Games has been pretty wildly different from anything else I own, where they use poker chips as their figures on the board as opposed, that's why they're chip theory games as opposed to like miniatures and things like that. But Too Many Bones is really neat because I know, Jonah, you're not a huge fan of like the randomness of dice all the time, but Too Many Bones tries to negate this because, as it says in the name, when you roll dice, there are bones which count as misses, but if you roll too many bones, it gives you like a really, really high powered attack once you've collected enough bones. So the more you miss, the more powerful an attack you can unleash on the enemies that you're fighting against. So it helps reduce the variance when it comes to rolling the dice. But it's totally different because you're completely building up these characters through a campaign by choosing what skills you want to add dice to. So you can make their attacks more powerful to roll more dice. You can add specialty powers, which have their own dice. So it's totally different than any other co-op I've got.
Mm-hmm. The two co-ops that I put down on my list were Hanabi and Shipwreck Arcana, which is a game that you own as well.
Yep.
And in Hanabi, everyone is working together, and in Shipwreck Arcana, everyone's working together. And an interesting difference between these two games is in Hanabi, one person gives a clue to one other person, but in Shipwreck Arcana, one person gives a clue to everybody. So in Shipwreck Arcana, you're trying to clue people into what the tile you have says on it. It's just going to be a number between 1 and 7, and you put the other tile on a card to show some mathematical or deduction reasoning for what else you have. And I think that the group element to Shipwreck Arcana is pretty neat. Not only that, but the group deduction in Shipwreck Arcana is purely math and counting based. I don't want to say math too much because, you know, one of the cards will be like, it's less than 4. That's not really math.
Logic. I'd say it's logic based.
And then in Hanabi, it's purely logic and intuition. I don't know. But I think they're different enough to both be in my bookshelf.
Yeah. I mean, on both of those games specifically, you need to kind of use these little clues to deduce what the other person's got and what they can play on their turn, which I think brings us really neatly into social deduction games. Look what I did. I used the word deduce to do that.
We're all proud of you.
Thanks. I'm proud of me. I know social deduction is something that you really like. I know we had the whole discussion on Blood on the Clock Tower. How many social deduction games do you currently own since you are waiting for Blood on the Clock Tower?
If we exclude Blood on the Clock Tower, 2. But I've been trying to get rid of one of them for a long time, unsuccessfully. And with Blood on the Clock Tower coming someday in the future, I plan on getting rid of the other one as well. So the two games that I have now.
Yeah, which one are you trying to get rid of, and which one will you eventually try to get rid of?
So the two games I have now are Werewolves and Avalon. And I think Werewolves is a much worse version of Avalon. It's also a much worse version of Blood on the Clock Tower. Or to keep things positive and nice, Blood on the Clock Tower greatly improves upon the Werewolves format. If I'm going to play a social deduction game before the global pandemic, I would have always chosen Avalon over Werewolves. So because of that, I just figured I'll trade Werewolves away. There isn't much of a market for it, so it sits on my shelf. Might end up at Goodwill someday, who knows? And then when Blood on the Clock Tower arrives, the choice is going to swing to that from Avalon. And I'm pretty sure every time. Avalon does have the ability to play a like 5 or 6 person game in 30 minutes, which I think Blood on the Clock Tower you can squeeze in that amount of time, but it's going to take longer. So, I don't know. Avalon, I don't want to play with 5 players. I'd only want to play it with at least 6. And if I'm at 6 people, that's already in Blood on the Clock Tower range.
Yeah, makes sense.
Do you own any social deduction games?
I believe the only true social deduction game where you're trying to figure out what role the other person is playing. I think the only true one that I own still is Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
How is that
so
different?
Battlestar Galactica is, I would say this falls under the semi-co-op bit as well, slash hidden traitor, but it is social deduction because anybody in the game could potentially be a Cylon, which is the evil character type in the show slash universe of Battlestar Galactica, which if you haven't watched the show, I highly recommend it. It's a great show. But you are kind of trying to sabotage the rest of the group from completing their objectives to make it harder for the human characters to make their way to Earth. Is it called Earth? I don't remember. It's been so long. Is it called Earth in the game?
Maybe.
Yeah, one of it's they, there's
I
so
think
many
it
cool
is.
planet names, but I think it's Earth. You're trying to make your way to Earth. And as a Cylon, you're trying to stay hidden while sabotaging the rest of the players. And as the players, you are trying to figure out who is the Cylon. And I think that's the only true social deduction game that I have.
Is it possible that you got rid of Nemesis because it sounds just like Battlestar Galactica?
It is possible. However, I have been contemplating selling Battlestar Galactica as well, just because I don't play many social deduction games in the first place, and
And that's a guaranteed 3 hours.
that's a guaranteed 3 hours. And I haven't checked prices in a while, but it's out of print, so I know I can at least make a little bit of money back. It's kind of on the chopping block for me just because I'm not sure where it falls at this particular moment. I'd like to play it again before I make that decision. But I think Nemesis and Blood on the Clock to, or Blood on the Clock too. I do think Nemesis and Battlestar Galactica were similar enough that I only needed one of them, and I have had a blast with Battlestar Galactica every time we have played it. So I think that's one of the areas that allowed me to cut Nemesis out of the collection. Now, if I'm counting games that I'm not 100% sure if they are true social deduction, Campy Creatures is one that might come up for me because you're trying to figure out what card the player is playing and try and counter that. But I didn't think that that was a true, like, somebody is this role. It's somebody's playing this card, and you're trying to figure out what that card might be. So I didn't think that that was a true social deduction game. So I think we found the category where I own the least types of that game,
All
and that
right.
would be social deduction.
Then let's move on to the next category where we each own the most amount of games. This is interesting for me to look at my shelf and see how many fit into this, considering the type of board gamer I like to think that I am. And this
I'm
category
interested in what category this might be.
is family games slash light games.
Ooh.
So I love my, 2.5 hour thinky games, but when I look at my shelf and I look at the family games, I have Azul, Dice Fishing Roll and Catch, Just One, Creeps of Keister Island, Sushi Go, Silver and Gold, Camel Up, Tichu, and Wavelength. So 9 games, which is a full quarter of my shelf, are family games.
Yeah, I now that you mention it, I'm not going to list all of mine because there are a good chunk, but a lot of the ones that you just mentioned are also on my shelf, and I feel like family games are the one category where it truly doesn't matter if a game is similar because they're quick and easy, and it might just be like, oh, I feel like playing this one today.
Right. Most, I would say family games tend to be more about the experience than the game play as well.
Yes.
So like for family games, I have, let's see here, Wavelength, I think is a great family game that is totally different from Silver and Gold.
Wavelength is now at the top of my wish list on Board Game Geek because I have registered for the Board Game Geek Secret Santa this year, and
Excellent.
they recommend buying something off of somebody's wish list. and I've wanted Wavelength for a while, but not enough at this point in time to buy it myself. So I'm hoping that whoever gets me on the Secret Santa will see that it says, "Number one would love to have," and chooses to get Wavelength. So we'll
I hope
see.
you get it. It's good. What are some family games slash light games that you have?
Village Pillage is the one that jumps to mind initially. I feel like that's the easiest game in my collection, and it's also enough of like a quick, fun little game with a fun little theme that I would always recommend that as like an initial jumping off point for the game night. Like I would start with that and then move to something else. Village Pillage, I also own Azul. Campy Creatures is enough of a family game, I believe, to make it somewhat easy. I own a game called Crossing, which I think you have played with Patrick and I. I actually bought it off of Patrick. It is a game where you are these little gnomish creatures, and you
Oh
are
wow,
trying to,
holy
and you're trying
smokes.
to take these gems, and you're trying to collect gems to get points. But it's also a little bit of a rock, paper, scissors match, similar to Village Pillage, in that what you can do on your turn is you count to three, and everybody will either put their hand over their personal collection of gems or point at somebody else's collection of gems. If you are blocking your collection of gems and somebody points at you, they get none of your gems. If somebody is not collecting their or not protecting their own collection and you point at it, you get to take the gems from them. But someone can also point to the middle of the board where there's a growing pile of gems to take, and you're trying to get various types of gems that are worth various amounts of points. So that is a fun one that I do enjoy playing, and I did buy that off of Patrick. So that's a fun little family game as well. Let's see. We might have somewhat different definitions of family game, just because when I look at mine, when I think family game, it's just quicker and easier games. Like I would consider Grim Forest a family game, even though it's still like
Yeah, I
a
mean, I have
somewhat.
Azul in family games, but that's. Look, in Jamie's family, they play Food Chain Magnate together. So,
So
that's a family game for some
I
people.
guess family games are subjective as well when it comes to what types of games your family likes. I'm just calling it something that might be an hour or less and
Right.
isn't super rules heavy. And I would say Grim Forest falls under that, but is probably the pushing the top end of what I would consider a family game. But would you consider, I guess this is a question I would ask you, would you consider party games and family games to be the same category?
Yes, within certain limits.
Fair. Because I also have We're Doomed, and I think We're Doomed is a party game, but
Yeah,
I
I
don't
think
know
they're
if it's a
basically the same category.
family game. So We're Doomed is this interesting, always 15-minute game because there's a sand timer where you are, as a group, trying to build a rocket ship to escape a failing Earth, hence We're Doomed. But each turn, whoever contributes the most money into the rocket ship that you're building as a group will get to read out like a decree card that could either affect just them or the group. And it's a bit of a party game in that, you can screw somebody else out of getting a seat on the rocket ship. So certain people will win, certain people will lose, but the number of seats out of the planet on the rocket ship depend on how many goods you put in to build the rocket ship. So the more you contribute, the more people can escape and win. But there's also a card that I love called Premature Evacuation, which literally is you leave on your own separate ship. You've guaranteed yourself a victory, even if somebody else wins through the normal means. But I just love that card.
Yeah, that's a good one. For party games, the reason I say family games over party games is because when you start saying party games, which is totally fine, but party games blend into social deduction games a lot of the time for me. And when I'm thinking of a family game, I'm generally thinking of fewer than six players and plays kind of quickly.
That
So
makes
that's
sense.
the distinction.
I would say for me the distinction mostly comes in that I feel like a party game is a game that improves greatly when drinking or rowdy friends are involved.
That's right. All right, next category for me, and then I'll let you say the next one because
Sure.
my last one after this next one is unique games in my collection that I feel do not fit into any of these other categories. Next one, shared infrastructure. We talked about this with Patrick, and the three games that I have are Tokyo Metro, The Great Zimbabwe, and Seoul Last Days of a Star. And I can make this pretty quick because those three games are all quite different from each other in theme and gameplay. Tokyo Metro is, running trains and speculating and buying stocks. Great Zimbabwe is being craftsmen in Africa, in Zimbabwe specifically, of course. And then Seoul Last Days of a Star is flying around in space trying to escape a dying star. And they all feel super different. I think they all also have very different intertwined mechanics. Seoul Last Days of a Star has the action point system in it, along with the shared infrastructure. Tokyo Metro has bidding and worker placement as well. And then The Great Zimbabwe has, I want to say bidding, but it's more of an auction mechanic for turn order. So there's the bid for turn order, there's the sharing of resources and craftsmen, and then there is a super neat victory requirement mechanic in that where you can require more or fewer points than other players to win. And I personally think that is one of the coolest mechanics I've ever seen because that means Ben can beat my 35 points with 29 points, which, when you're tracking your games on an app, doesn't make a lot of sense, but in person, quite cool.
I think the only shared infrastructure game, as far as I remember, because I don't remember what I brought up when we were actually talking about this, would you say PAX Premier Second Edition is shared infrastructure?
Yeah, I think we talked about it then as well, and we said that yes, it kind of is.
Yeah,
Because
I
if
don't
two
think
people are
I.
the same alliance, yes. But otherwise, eh.
Yeah, I don't think I own many, if any, shared infrastructure games, to be honest with you. I guess, you know what? One for sure, Brass Birmingham is shared infrastructure. That is probably the only one, which, doesn't help me differentiate why I own multiples, but to give you just an idea of how that one works, there are canals and railways that connect to varying cities. And each player can use other players' canals and railways, and also can use other players' factories. I'm just going to use the term factories because there are a few different types. But I can take coal from a factory that Jonah owns and run it down the river on a canal boat that Patrick owns in order to turn it in at a city that I have some infrastructure in. And they will each get a bonus for me using their infrastructure that they've put in place for me to complete that objective. And I think that's the big one that I've got, and I think that's the only one that I've really got.
All right, then what is the next one that we'll be discussing? The next mechanic slash idea?
I think a good one, and I don't know, I mean, I guess just because I didn't have many of the shared infrastructure, you don't have many in terms of the two-player slash skirmish games. But
That's right.
that was
I
a
have one
game
two-player
mechanic for
game.
me. What is that two-player game?
Santorini.
Yes, I also have Santorini. And then, do you want to describe Santorini, and then I can jump into some of the ones that I own since you've
Sure.
got that one?
So Santorini is a two-player game that is an abstract game along the lines of chess and go and checkers. And in this game, each person controls two people, and you will move one person and then build around that person. The game takes place in a 5x5 grid, and you can climb one level at a time. If you ever reach the third level, you win. And that is Santorini. The game comes with a bunch of god powers because it's Greece and Greek mythology. And that really changes things up, which is enjoyable.
I think we had a brief discussion when your mother joined us for the podcast on Santorini.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So go listen to that. Jonah's mother is great, so I know she's listening. Hello. But for me, I've got Mythic Battles Pantheon, which can be played 3 or 4 players in a free-for-all or team game, but I much prefer it at 2 players. And that is a skirmish-type game where you are using... Right now, it is just Greek mythology, but they are coming out with Mythic Battles Ragnarok soon, which is Norse mythology. But you are running around a map trying to kill the other person's god or titan, depending on whether you choose to use titans or gods. Or you are trying to collect divine crystals that have been left along the map. So it's a 2-player skirmish game, which is not super different from some of the other 2-player games I've got, such as Hate, which is, I know, a game Jonah is not a fan of based on the video alone. I would recommend those listening to just go watch the YouTube video for Hate by Cool Mini or Not, just to see what we're talking about. But I think Mythic Battles, for me, differentiates itself enough because you are, from Hate specifically, because you are drafting your army at the beginning of the match. So it is a true skirmish game, because if you know games like Warhammer? I think it's Warhammer. You have a point system, and each unit is worth a certain number of points, and you draft an army based on the number of points you are allowed. So you might not choose to take a super powerful unit so that you can get a few less powerful units to bring into battle with you. Hate is just a 2-player, 1v1, dudes-on-a-map battle game. You have set armies. You don't draft from those armies. So I think that is a good differentiator for Mythic Battles. It's more of a true skirmish war game than most of my other 2-player games. One I've talked about a lot recently, Unmatched. Unmatched is a 1v1 or 2v2 team-based little skirmish game. I will not go deep into it because I've discussed it at length very recently on both this podcast and the last episode. But that is another one that I really enjoy. I would say that that one differentiates itself because it's quick and super easy to pick up. Mm-hmm. So that is one, I don't think I've had a game take longer than a half hour, whereas the other two could be an hour plus. So it's a nice, quick, easy 2-player game to get through if you're just looking for something nice and easy to play.
Next we have Undaunted.
Undaunted would be the next one. As I've said, it's a little bit different than some of my other deck builders because you're doing some things with these little army platoons on a map. And I think that about covers most of my 2-player 1v1 skirmish games. But I think they differentiate themselves enough based on either time to play, theme, or whether or not they are like a true miniatures skirmish game because you're drafting an army. So I think they all fit in my collection. But I will say Mythic Battles probably stands above the rest just because I love the theme and the miniatures are absolutely unbelievable. And I'm a sucker for miniatures, so that helps as well.
Sounds about right. Do you have any other ideas before we move on to unique games that we own?
No, I'm interested to hear what unique games you have in your collection. I think we move on to unique games now. I think that's a good one.
All right, unique games. I have 3 games that I think are totally different than any other game that I own. And I'm sure you're going to argue this point, but my 3 games are Food Chain Magnate, Castell, and QE.
I will not argue Castell or QE.
That's what I thought.
Food Chain is definitely different than most games I've played, and I can't think of something off the top of my head to really compare it to right now, but I think that there are other games that are similar-ish, but I think Castell and QE are totally different than anything I've played as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that they're different from any other game that I've played. It's that they're different from any other game that I own.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, Castell is about stacking humans and making cool towers, and that's just totally different from other games that I have. QE is the only pure auction game that I have, and it's also one where everyone has infinite money. So it's already different from every other auction game. And then Food Chain Magnate, I just don't really think that it slots into like worker placement or tableau building, or really the only thing that it would be defined as is an economic game. And I don't really have any other purely economic games. Like you could say Brass is an economic game for sure,
Yeah.
but I don't have that. Nor do I want it.
I think if you're now that you're specifying that yes, it is against other games you own in your collection, I don't think I can really argue Food Chain 100% for you.
Well,
And
thank you.
oh, you're welcome.
It has earned its spot on my shelf.
Just super duper quick, because I cannot believe that I forgot them in my 1v1s. Star Wars Rebellion and War of the Ring. I legit, these are the two big boys. I don't know how I did not remember them. And these are really interesting because they are often compared as basically the same game. And I've also said on another episode that Star Wars Rebellion is just an easier to teach, lighter version of War of the Ring. But I also mentioned earlier that if it has Lord of the Rings involved, I'm going to buy it. So that justifies it enough for me. But I think those are different than the other two player games I have, and then I'm going to jump into my unique game or games. Just in that you are trying to find a hidden character on the map. So while you are going 1v1 and trying to defeat your only opponent, those two games are unique in that you're trying to find a hidden person on the map or a hidden location on the map and then attack it. So it kind of changes up how you play the game in terms of the strategy. It's not just a solely let me go attack my enemy. It's I gotta find them first and then attack them.
Right.
So, and again, like I said, Lord of the Rings, I'll buy it. I'm definitely going to be playing Star Wars Rebellion more often than War of the Ring, but it's got Lord of the Rings. And I am looking, and this should give you the idea of how I am as a board game collector. If anybody out there has a version of the anniversary or collector's edition of War of the Rings Second Edition, and they're willing to sell it to me for less than $2,000, please contact me at Jonah. Wait, what is our email again, Jonah?
Oh, come on. Jonah Ben Podcast.
Jonah Ben Podcast. I didn't know if it was Ben Jonah Podcast. Leave me alone. Just reach out at jonahbenpodcast@gmail.com because I want this collector's edition of the game, but I'm not going to spend $2,000 to do it because that's what it's worth right now. Well, not worth. That's what it
Not what it's
costs right
worth. They're
now.
going to sell it to you for
No.
2,000 if you say that.
It's worth $700. And I say that with no joking in my voice, no joking in any bit. If you want to sell it for $700, I will buy it for $700.
He'll give you $702 even. Sweeten the deal.
Oh yeah, I mean, but yes. So that is Lord of the Rings. Now you know what I mean.
Done and dusted.
Unique games in my collection. I have to go find it because I think it's personally, I think it's unique because I can't figure out where it would fall as well in terms of the games I own. Monster Slaughter slash Monster's Laughter,
Monster's Laughter.
however you want to pronounce it. I think that is different than the other games in my collection because you are running around this cabin in the woods is the theme. So you play as the monsters trying to kill the cabin goers.
Then who plays as the laughter?
You can laugh while we play. I'm not sure. But I'm not sure where this falls. Because you are trying to search for the cabin goer. What would you call them? The survivors, I guess. I'll call them survivors, even though you're trying to kill them, just
A
to make
cabin
this
goer?
easier.
I'd call it a camper.
Okay. Oh, look at that. I don't camp, so I'm just a stupid cabin goer. Yeah, so you are trying to find these campers hidden throughout this cabin in the woods, and you are playing as the monsters trying to kill those campers. It's got a few different areas within the cabin, but you're not controlling them, so it doesn't fall under area control. Mm-hmm. And every person playing is a different monster family. So you can have some people be the clowns, some people be the aliens, some people be the zombies.
Oh, so no one is a cabin goer.
Correct.
No one is a camper. Everyone's a monster.
No one's a camper. Everyone's a monster. And you are trying to kill the campers. However, you can earn points by predicting the order in which the campers will die. And you can also give yourself a favorite target. And if you are the person to deal the killing blow to that camper, you get bonus points. So,
cool. I'd like to try that now that I've heard it described for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've played it alongside you playing other games, but I don't know if I've ever actually described how it works to you.
I have blinders on whenever I play board games, so I apologize.
But it's definitely neat. My brother enjoys the game. Kevin enjoys the game. We've played it a few times, so it's definitely fun. But it's got like a mix of these mechanics that I can't pin down into any other category. I think that's mm-hmm. the most unique one I've got. And what another thing that makes it unique really quick, and then I'll let you just jump in. The box is the board. So the bottom of the box is the base of the cabin. And then you put these little constructible walls inside the bottom of the box and it forms the cabin. And then the rest of the board fits around the base of the box. So you use the box as the board.
The only other game I know that kind of does that is Wavelength. I don't really think it should count, but the box is the stand and it is the scorekeeper thing. So I guess the insert is, but you're not going to take that out.
Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's the only... I'm going to browse through my list again, and if anything else comes up, but that's like the one that jumped out to me immediately as being like the most unique thing in my collection.
Right. The other super unique one for me is that I didn't think of is Crokinole. Crokinole is the only dexterity game I own. It is the only game I own that is, 2 feet big and 30, 40 pounds and made of wood. Anyway, Crokinole is very different from all the other games I own, but it also is arguably not a board game, so.
Yeah, I own Crokinole as well, and it's definitely unique. Also amazingly fun, so if you've never played Crokinole, go out and find yourself a Crokinole board. I think the very first time I played Crokinole was at PAX Unplugged. And some dude was hauling around this giant round wooden board. And you got like super excited because you knew what it was, but I'd never heard of it before. And we went over and you asked if we could join because I'm not that type of person. And they let us play and took it from there. I loved it right away. So, let's see. Oh, another one for me. Just because I don't own any tile laying games, Sorcerer City is unique in my collection.
Oh yeah, I guess Electropolis would be for me as well, but go on.
Yeah, so Sorcerer City is, as I said, a tile laying game. So what that means is you have these tiles in front of you, these little cardboard tiles, and each one represents the district of a city, and you are on the clock, so you flip a sand timer, and before that sand timer runs out, you are trying to complete various objectives by placing these tiles in a certain pattern on the table in front of you. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you can use the money that you've earned to purchase new tiles it's kind of like a deck builder, but for tiles. That's why I didn't bring it up in deck building, but you can purchase tiles from a market. And then the next round, those tiles can be shuffled into your stack and you can use those to add districts to your city as well. But that's the only tile laying game I own. So that one's pretty unique as well. Have you played a tile laying game before, Jonah?
Does the Electropolis count?
Yeah, I would say Electropolis counts. Have you played Carcassonne? I know that you mentioned it.
I haven't. That is a classic game I have not played. Just like you haven't played Pandemic.
Yeah, I haven't played Carcassonne either. I think the only real classic game that most people mention that I've played is Ticket to Ride.
Hmm.
I mean, I played Monopoly, but I don't enjoy it. But Ticket to Ride.
Right.
Ticket to Ride I do own.
Speaking of Pandemic.
Yes.
Pandemic Legacy Season 0 will be arriving this week, and we are going to run through that. We are going to have a new weekly segment, a.k.a. here's what happened in Pandemic Legacy, but we can't spoil anything, so here's a comment on the game.
We're going to call it the Legacy segment or something like that. I'll come up with a more clever name because that's my job. And
we have a week to think about it.
Yeah, and we're literally going to say, oh, this session went well. We enjoyed it, and then we're going to move on.
Exactly.
More time for the great transition music.
That is it for today's episode. If you have a game in your collection that is totally unique from every other one, we'd love to hear about it. Similarly, if you don't care if all of your games are exactly the same, we'd love to hear that too.
I'd also love to hear if you have the War of the Ring Collector's Edition.
You can find me at 101 George Lane. No real addresses here. Well, we will see you all next week. Thank you, Louisa, for the great music, and have a nice day.